Everyone, and welcome to episode 38 of Movie Raw Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again on this lovely, brisk Wednesday morning in the middle of August is Duncan Shields of the Time Band a Minute, say the least.
Dropping in through my little hole in space-time to partake in some wonderful Die Hard conversations.
Hey, works for me.
Yeah,
just try not to break your neck.
Okay.
Yeah, just, you know, promise me that you're gonna try not to fall down the stairs.
Okay, yeah. I promise you.
Okay, all right, good. And once we get that out of the way, so we can move along. So,
yeah.
Minute 38 begins with Tony stating a completely incorrect fact and ends with McClane being completely out of breath. So yesterday we ended the episode with leaving everyone on pins and needles because, you know, Tony says, because you're a policeman, you know, and we're wondering what else he's going to say. And then he continues by saying there are rules for policemen. You know, so apparently he really does believe, or he makes it sound as if he believes, or he wants McClane to believe, I guess, that he believes that all police follow rules.
Well, know? it's a central linchpin of this entire movie. You know, like when Hans Gruber says, you ask for miracles, I give you the FBI. You know,
yes.
Like it's all about, he knows the protocols. This whole thing, this whole caper will only work if there's protocols. And so Tony, I think, is trying to be like a Gruber Jr. here. He's like, you know, Hans Gruber is always saying that, you know, the American, you know, the justice professionals in America have to follow certain protocols, which is why this is all going to work. So I'm also going to throw my hat in the ring and assume that right now.
Especially when I have a gun to my head.
It's like in the end of Goodfellas, right? When the cops put the gun to Ray Liotta's head and say freeze, he said, as soon as I heard freeze, I knew it was the cops. Because if it had been one of the Goodfellas, they wouldn't have said anything. I'd be dead.
Exactly.
So the fact that he's literally just saying freeze is proving Tony's point.
Right. Okay, that's true. Right? Then you're very right about that. So,
he is a loose cannon. And he's on the edge, and he skirts the rules, but he didn't just literally execute him.
Right. And then he goes, yeah, that's what my captain keeps telling me. And as he says this, he elbows him in the head.
This doesn't look like an effective blow, but okay.
Forget about that. But why is he, you know, what does McClane think he's going to gain by hitting Tony right now? You know, he's got a gun to his head. So, you know, doesn't he want to try to get Tony to talk, you know, or get information to try? He has no idea what's going on. He knows that there are these strange men in the building. That's all he knows, that are shooting guns and that they killed Takagi. But besides that, what does he know? He doesn't know why they're here. He doesn't know what they want. You know, this is, he's supposed to get information at this point. You know, that's what you do. You threaten Tony and say, if you don't tell me what's going on, I'm going to blow your brains out. You know,
yeah.
he doesn't know who Tony is. He doesn't know if Tony's going to agree or disagree or whatever, but you at least do something. But no, he doesn't do that. All he does is, you know, tell him, that's what my captain keeps telling me, and then he hits him and starts a brawl between the two of them. You know,
not really good strategy here, McClane.
No, not at all. Especially since Tony is much larger than him. Tony then thrust backwards and McClane goes into the wall. You know, literally. Then McClane jumps up and piggybacks Tony. And
aggressive piggybacking here. For sure.
That's right. And, you know, he's trying to, you know, hold on to Tony, and Tony, for some strange reason, now starts spinning around and is opening fire. I guess that goes back to what you were saying the other day about, you know, he shouldn't have had his finger on the trigger. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's reflexive. He's just like, bad, do something. I don't know. Shoot. You know, like, and it's like, you're not, you know, don't. You're wasting bullets. There's no, you're not shooting anywhere.
Exactly. You're wasting bullets from you know, one of those ever replenishing, you know, magazines and movies.
Yeah.
You know, they forget about the fact that you have maybe 30 bullets and that's it, you know.
Yeah.
which
No, I remember I fought a, I shot an Uzi on a gun range once in Vegas, and that was like really apparent. It was like, oh, empty.
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
like I was like, well, that, like, I think everybody should go to a gun range and, you know, fire a Magnum or fire a shotgun or fire an Uzi because it dispels so many myths that you've been raised up believing by action movies. Right, like the, and also like he said, you know, keep the Uzi pointed down because it'll buck upwards with each bullet.
Correct.
And I was like, okay, I gotcha. And then I fired it, and yeah, the first two bullets went into the wall, and like the next nine went into the ceiling. I was like, oh, you like it really kicks up, like you know, you don't know. And like I fired a Magnum, and I just about took out my own eye because of the kickback was. Like a horse kicked my hands or something. Like I was like, so you see these movies where Dirty Harry's one-handing a Magnum, you know, six times, or you see someone who's got an Uzi in each hand and they're firing it like a hose for 5 minutes, or they're, you know, doing all this, all these things that like once you handle some firearms, you're like, none of those things are possible.
No, but it's Clint
You
Eastwood, so
know,
maybe it is possible, you know.
maybe it is,
You know,
maybe it is. Maybe.
we'll have to ask, friend of the show J-Bam, who did the
Yeah.
Dirty Harry minute by minute podcast. Maybe he has some insight into that. So J-Bam, when you listen to this, let us know what you think. Does Dirty Harry can Clint Eastwood really, handle a Magnum that way? Who knows?
And I forget what movie I saw. Oh, it was A Prophet. It was called A Prophet, where it's in a French prison, and
I think I've seen that.
it's a good movie, and it's shot like a documentary. Like I was like, I didn't feel like I was watching a movie. I felt like I was just watching. I felt like I was inside a prison with these guys. But there's a bit where they have a gunfight inside a car at the end, and everybody is like deaf for 5 minutes as a result because they're inside a car and they fired a gun.
Correct.
And that's like, okay, like all your eardrums just like went into shock. And it was one of the first times in a movie where I've seen that. You know, you always see people firing in enclosed spaces and they're just fine. And I'm like, nope, that's, they are loud, but okay.
And McClane, like, looks like he's riding him like a bull. Like
Yeah.
he's because Tony's trying to buck him off, and he's grabbing onto him, very forcefully, and it looks like a bull that's trying to get a
Yeah.
rider off
This
his back.
really reminds me of the Dread Pirate Roberts taking down
Yes.
Andre the Giant in The Princess Bride. I love a good
Exactly.
David and Goliath fight. I do think that if Tony had had the presence of mind, he should have backed McClane into the saw
Yeah, that probably would have been a good idea.
instead of these flimsy metal struts and some flimsy drywall.
Yeah, exactly. And then he spins around trying to get McClane off his back, and then he shoots at a 360 degree angle, hitting all the walls, electric wires and stuff like that. Again, take your finger out of the trigger. And
Yes.
then he slams McClane into another wall, breaking the sheetrock there, trying to get him off his back. And then, I never noticed this before until I, did the research here. There's actually dialogue that happens during the scene where McClane is screaming at him, and he says to him, "Drop that motherfucker. I'll fucking kill you."
Right.
And then he continues, he grunts, and then he goes, come on, I'll fucking rip your head off." So
Well, maybe that
you
was the
don't hear
point.
these things. You can't really
No.
hear it. He's,
But earlier we were talking like, what is his possible strategy? He's supposed to get information out of the guy or something. And I think maybe what the flying elbow was about was that he was the first step to disarming him.
Right.
He wants to disarm him before he asks him questions, and that's what resulted in this thing. But you're right, he should have just started asking while he had the drop on him.
Well, again, when you have a gun against someone's head, you say, "Okay, drop your weapon."
Yeah.
That's the first thing you say. That's the one
That
thing you learn from
there it is.
Westerns, you
Exactly.
know?
Exactly. Drop it. Yeah.
But you don't do that while you're fighting. You do that beforehand. A little bit beforehand, you can try and do these things. And, McClane grabs Tony's neck, and then Tony then heads for another wall and starts headbutting McClane into the wall like three successive times, clearly breaking the wall. Who's gonna pay for that damage?
Yeah.
And he doesn't let go. He it doesn't matter how Tony goes, you know, Tony just goes backwards. You know, he goes forward. He goes in all different directions. And then he ends up crashing through, you know, an area of construction. And then somehow he makes it through the door of the 32nd floor, you know, stairwell. You'd think that door is a much more powerful door. I mean, we're not talking here just about drywall, something like that. They take that door off the hinges as they go through it.
Well, that's 400 pounds of mad, angry man just slamming.
Men.
Men, yeah. 400 pounds of men just slamming into that door. And, you know, office doors, it's not a metal door, but I guess it would be a fire door. So,
you sure that's not a metal door?
Oh, it might be. If it's a metal
door. No, it's wooden. No, it's wooden. If you look at it, you see it's a wooden door.
If that was a metal door to the fire escape or whatever, then it needs to be fireproof and it needs to be sturdy. So I would have less trouble buying it. But it is, it does seem to be like it's a wooden door and those things. I mean, whatever. You know, especially.
And, I mean, this is choreographed really well because, like, you know, we have McLean is the one underneath on his back, you know, with Tony on top of him. And then as they slide down, you see that Tony flips over him and then they start tumbling down the stairwell. That's right. Then, you know, John lands on him and we hear the loud ADR sound of a neck snapping or something snapping.
And a squawk. You get a good squawk from Tony.
A grunt. Yeah.
Not the Will. What would have been a good Wilhelm scream. Place for this, but we get a good little squawk from him.
Yeah. And you can see in these
quick shots here that the stunt people, especially when they go through the door and their faces land right in front of the camera, you can see it's not Bruce Willis and it's not the actor playing. It's not Andreas.
Right.
But it's so quick. It's like so quick. And so it's really well done in that way because you've got those old Star Trek fights where you're like, that's not remotely the person. That's not remotely William Shatner at all. You know, like, but if you do it well with good editing, you can do this where their faces are right in the camera, but you don't notice unless you're going through it with like a fine tooth comb like we're doing.
Yeah. Oh, wow. You really can see it's someone else.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis is definitely not him.
Yeah.
He's got like a meteor face.
Yeah.
Oh wow, yeah, that's really cool. I didn't even think to look at that or anything like that.
Yeah,
wow, yeah. I mean, it makes me wonder, you know, if in real life it's that easy to break someone's neck like they do in movies. You know, a lot of times, you know, people will just like take their, you know, put their hands around someone's neck and within 2 seconds just snap it.
It's the Vulcan nerve pinch of action movies. You see these little, like, you know, 89-pound women reaching up and just grabbing some, you know, muscle mounted of a man and just giving their head a little tweak. And then we hear the neck snapping and they go down like a sack of bricks. And it's because they have training. I'm like, okay, sure. But the tensile strength of a strong neck, you know, that's not just training. There's no like magic trick, Jenga puzzle unlocking mechanism. Like it's meat, you know? And I think it's a lot, but you do it for the same reason that you do, like, you know, strangling scenes in movies are often quite short, you know, because it does take about literally 12 minutes and we don't have that kind of time, you know, so you just have to, you know, just, you know, shorthanded.
Yeah, completely. And, you know, at this point, Tony doesn't move at all. And McLean is completely out of breath because, you know, Bruce Willis just was placed in that area instead of having him, you know, roll down the stairs because his stunt double did that. You know, we see blood on his t-shirt, on his A shirt. It's not a t-shirt really, on his A shirt. And then he gets up and he kicks Tony's body just to make sure he's really dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he's not fazed by this at all. You know,
he doesn't really care. I love what he does. He picks up Tony's head. And Tony's doing a great job of staring at the ceiling with his dead
and his eyes are like they're completely glazed over,
totally wide open.
Great.
And his lifeless open blue eyes. And then he drops the head back down and then he pats him on the chest.
Yeah.
Almost like good boy. Like he's He's like, ah, oh, okay, nice one. I'm, you know,
Yeah, but he.
way to be dead. Congratulations for being dead. You really help. You're doing me a solid here, you know.
Yeah. Well, you made it easier for me, but this also shows that he's completely out of shape. You know, you think of Bruce Willis being at least somewhat in shape here, but this you know, the idea of trying to present him as an everyman, you know, just this little fight has
Yeah.
taken the entire wind out of him.
Yeah, and it but it, he's a lot like Harrison Ford in Raiders of the Lost Ark in this movie, in that like you know the good guy's gonna win. You know that, but you have to make it seem like it was close, like it was a challenge, like it was a struggle. And that's the challenge in every single movie, is you have to make it seem like, oh, how's he going to get out of this one? You know, or like, oh man, that was close. And if you can effectively make the audience feel that way, like at the end of The Matrix, every time Neo goes into the room and the agent has a drop on him and shoots him like six times, I'm like, oh no. And I've seen the movie four times, you know, or 10 times or whatever. Like, why am I thinking, oh no, I shouldn't, you know, but every time I'm like, oh, you know. And but it's like that here. You're like, wow, that was close. He's out of shape. This fight took it out of him. It's good. It's good.
And that's pretty much how this minute ends. We
Yep.
actually get it to end, you know, at a normal part, unlike the last few minutes that we were doing, where it was in the mid-sentence or whatever. We get a little bit of
Mid-sentence.
a break here, you know, the way that they do this here.
Now, a couple of things about this scene. And now, is this Bruce Willis's actual tattoo on his arm, or is this for the movie? Is that a cop tattoo that he's got for the movie?
I've been trying to figure out what tattoo it is, but I believe that it's not a real tattoo. I
It
believe it's
doesn't
something
look
just
like,
for the movie.
because I know he has tattoos, and I was looking up his tattoos, and it doesn't look like that's one of them. So I think it's like a
I believe it's a
policeman's.
tattoo. Now, what will be interesting is to see if he has the same tattoo in later Die Hard movies. You
Ah,
know,
yeah, for sure.
I'll have to keep that in mind, you know, to check when I get to the other movies.
You also
You
get
know.
a really clear look at his gnarly shoulder surgery scar
Yes.
in this
Yeah,
scene. And
I noticed that for the first time, I think about 3 weeks ago, you know, that there was a
in
point where
this
you can see that, like, his rotator cuff, you know, he had some sort of surgery there.
there's complications from a broken arm that he got when he was 17. And
Wow.
I remember seeing it and thinking that it was makeup, but they don't talk about it in the film at all. So it's like it's not relevant to the movie. So why would they put it in there? So I was thinking, so is that like his
Maybe it's real.
actual scar? And
Yeah.
you know, he's an action star, so I'm used to my action stars having flawless bodies, but he's got this giant scar there, and
Yeah.
I was shocked to find out that it was real, and I was kind of like, oh, that's cool. It added a depth of
Yeah.
realness to it, kind of like Sharon
Kind of with
Stone's got
Harrison.
this. What's that, kind of with Harrison
No, I
Ford?
was gonna say it's kind of like with Harrison Ford, where he has the scar on his chin. Where in
Yeah.
different movies they, you know, you have an Indiana Jones where they mention that he got that from the whip. And in Star Wars they never mention where he got it from, but in Working Girl he said that like he slipped on the toilet when he after he got his ear pierced as a kid or something like that.
Right.
And you know,
It's like Sharon Stone's got a really big scar on her neck because she was riding a horse as a child and ran into a clothesline and it ripped her neck open. So they cover it up for almost all of the movies that she's in. But there's a couple of movies at the beginning of Sphere when they're just talking to the camera. She's got this like, it's a huge scar right across her neck. And it's like a scary scar. You know, you're like, wow, it looks like it's a close call. It's amazing you're still with us, you know. But I like
it
when
was a clothesline call.
Heyo. Now I'm having a hard time getting data on this, but I heard that this scene in particular was very dangerous and nearly killed the stunt actor.
I can understand
Because if I'm remembering correctly, the stunt was supposed to be a little something else, but when this happened, they went down the stairs in this way. They just made it look like Tony got his neck broken and called it a day. Like, because they were like, because when they did the take, it did almost break the guy's neck. And,
Right.
but I can't find any data on that. And I forget where I heard it. And I forget what, where I found out that information. But I can't find any data on it. So I could be totally wrong. but I remember a story about how this scene was like almost took that stunt actor out.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, like they're supposed to go down
it does
the stairs.
Look like a very difficult scene to have to deal with, you know.
Yeah, like they were going to land on the gun and the gun was going to go off or something. They had a different thing planned, but then this happened and it damaged the stunt actor, so they couldn't do another take. So they decided to just say, okay, his neck broke. That's how this scene ends now.
You think
you know, like, that's the, maybe I wish I could find my corroborating facts on this one because I can't, but that's something that I remember as a hearing about a fact from this movie. But if I can't find any data on it, I might be just making stuff up in my head, but we'll see.
Right.
So
no, I mean, they don't have anything there on IMDb. Listen, the only thing they talk about with the stunt is the mistake, you know, with the jump.
Sure. Yeah.
With the shaft. They don't mention anything else there.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, cool. You have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get to the script?
Nope.
Okay. So the script just says a few little things, nothing very much. It says, McLean suddenly pistol whips Tony across the head. Tony reels, then swallows, worried for the first time.
Ah.
That's interesting that they mention that. And then McLean says, let's go. And then it goes into, it's very descriptive about their fight of everything that's going on. But again, in the script, the entire thing takes place in office cubicles, you know, where they're breaking desks and they're, you know, going through like partitions and stuff like that. But there's nothing, you know, we don't get, I like the fact that this takes place in an area full of construction.
Yeah, me too.
You know, but they still have them going through, you know, the stairwell door, but it says that they open it. It says they careen across the hall into the stairway door, opening it and crashing into the stairwell landing, then down the concrete steps into the wall of the landing below. For a moment, both men lie still. McLean, still holding onto Tony's neck, releases it, and the man's head flops sickeningly to the side. You know, so, yeah. I mean, the plan was to kill Tony anyway, so... Not something that happened by accident.
No, so I could, yeah, I don't know where. It's really frustrating to me because I can't find any data to back that up.
But I remember when this eventually airs, you can you have a few months to look for that information, and then you can post it, you know, there on you the day that it airs. So yeah, you know, that works too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not coming out tomorrow, so don't worry. You got a little bit of time.
Okay.
Mark that down for yourself.
Yeah.
So every Wednesday we have a segment called Hans Hump Day, where my guest will give their five favorite performances by the great thespian Alan Rickman, who we haven't seen yet this week, but maybe he'll decide to drop in on us a little later this week. Who knows?
Yeah.
So, Duncan, what have you got? Once again, start with number five, work your way up to number one, unless you got honorable mentions to start off with in movies that you had small roles in.
One, two, three, four. Okay, my number five is Robin Hood. I did not care for the film, but it was made endlessly quotable because of him. That, you, 10 o'clock, you, 10:30, bring a friend. And that, like, why would you use a spoon, sir? Because it would hurt more. Like, all that.
Because all that it's dull.
Yeah, right? Fantastic stuff.
Yes.
Galaxy Quest, for sure. Hilarious. I'm glad that he got picked as the sort of Leonard Nimoy analog in that, you know, by Grobthar's hammer, all that kind of stuff. It was really, really good. And the guy who's, like, sick of playing the role but has to show up to the cons. Perfect, because I mean, I think he was also the voice of Marvin the Paranoid Android.
Yes.
Hitchhiker's remake, and you know, because he's got that voice that I have seen way too much, and I am so done, but I am somehow still cursed with life. You know, he's got that great voice for that. Harry Potter films at number three, all of them. His Snape was unparalleled. He didn't want to take Die Hard for fear of being typecast as a villain, much like David Warner, who played Sark in Tron and Jack Ripper in Time After Time, and the literal embodiment of evil in Time Bandits. So, and I imagine it's the same for the actor Michael Wincott from The Crow. Like, when you play a bad guy and you nail it, and people love you for it, then get ready to play a bad guy for the rest of your life, which is kind of like, you know, golden handcuffs for an actor, because maybe you're getting good money to play these roles, but you're like, I can do so much more than this. And right. That's now, why, yeah.
Right. So because I give points to each of them. So, you know, I you want to pick one of the Harry Potter movies that you think he's the best in?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe the second half of the last one, or else the, you know, when he's being introduced, whatever the one where he goes number 42 when he's, or number two, I don't know. I'll go with, film two or the final film, I guess, when it all.
Well, pick one of them.
All right. Final film. I'll go for final film.
Okay. Whatever, sorry. I just want to have, you know, film. I just want to have, yeah, want to be able to tally this all up. And, you know, I can't give points to every one of the Harry Potter movies.
Yeah. Yeah, put me down for 10 points, please.
There you go.
And then my pick for number two is the first film that I saw him in was Truly, Madly, Deeply. So I never knew him as a bad guy until I saw Die Hard. I saw him in Truly, Madly, Deeply, and then I saw him in Die Hard. So, and in Truly, Madly, Deeply, he's a romantic lead. And it's a beautiful, beautiful film. Wonderful, wonderful movie. And then my number one pick for him was Sweeney Todd, because I saw Sweeney Todd unfamiliar with the opera and kind of not super into it. But my partner's really into musicals. And I'm like, well, I mean, I'll go see it. It's Tim Burton. It's another Tim Burton, Johnny Depp joint. You know, and I don't think I knew that Alan Rickman was in it. So I wanted to see it because I heard the songs were pretty good. Kind of like it took me forever to get to Hamilton. So I was like, okay, Sweeney Todd, let's check it out. Oh, Alan Rickman's in this. And I'd just come off a decade or more of seeing him play Snape. So I was like, oh, I want to see him play something else, you know. And he was not Snape in Sweeney Todd, but he was a bad person, an evil person. But he was able to be so much more evil in a rich, layered way than in the sort of, you know, two-dimensional Snape character, or the more sort of family-friendly Snape character. In Sweeney Todd, he's legit sinister, and every second he's on screen, you're like, don't mess with this guy. Oh my gosh. Because he's like rich and powerful, and he is, he will mess you up. And just the gravitas and the majesty he has had. I don't know. But I remember looking over his film list here, and I feel like I want to give Quigley Down Under another try, because I saw that movie when it came out, and I completely forgot that Alan Rickman was the bad guy in that movie, or was it that movie. So I do want to say a little bit about him.
Where's Die Hard on your list?
Well, I didn't think I was allowed to include that
one. Of course you're allowed to.
Thought it was... films other than Die Hard.
No, not at all.
Oh, well, then I would probably put Die Hard at the number one for his performance, because his like, don't shoot me, don't shoot me, I'm just a hapless American, you know, bit, right. it's cinema history, you know, to him to go from a very, what I thought was a credible German accent to like, it was the first time I saw somebody switch accents, I think, in a movie, and somebody that I knew was not American switched to an American accent in a movie. Like, you know, you've got someone like Daniel Radcliffe and Horns and something where they have the accent for the whole movie, but to see them switch between it in one scene is just always so great.
Right.
And the more flawless it is, the more impressive it is when someone does your regional dialect perfectly. And just a second ago, they had a heavy German accent or something, you know, it blows your mind. There's something about it that I just can't ever get tired of. And this was something. And then in this movie, he was so good at it. So.
Okay. Makes a lot of sense.
And, but I do want to, I read that Alan Rickman was discovered by Joel Silver and John McTiernan when they saw him in a stage play of Dangerous Liaisons.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
He, he played the Jonathan Malkovich character, Valmont,
Yes.
and I just was like, what? Like, oh, would I have loved to have seen that play? It's like I found out that there was a version of Amadeus done with Tim Curry playing Mozart and Ian McKellen playing Salieri.
Oh,
You know,
wow.
and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, holy what? And I would love to have seen that. It's also pretty cool that the first scene they filmed was Gruber meeting McClane.
Yes.
And that scene of them meeting was one of the first ones they got in the can. So
Yeah.
anyway, there you go.
Great. Excellent. Okay. So you want to once again tell people where they can find you.
TorontologicallySpeaking.com, TimeBanditsMinute.com, or go to buyduncanshields.com. On, you know, buyduncanshields on Instagram, Twitter, whatever. And
All right.
yeah, look forward to talking to you.
Excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go review and subscribe on any podcatcher that you might be using to listen to this show. Finding me is quite simple. Just do a search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, which is movierobminute.com. You can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on Facebook. So, Duncan, you feel like coming back again tomorrow?
I do, yes.
All right, excellent. So we will see you tomorrow. And until then, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!